Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Okay, well, who would have thought that one simple little question posted online by a blogger in Nashville could spark such a response? The question was this: what is the one thing you feel you can't say in church? And the woman who asked it, author Ann Jackson, was amazed at the response. Hundreds of people around the world, from churchgoers to atheists, started sharing some of their deepest, darkest secrets. Adultery, greed, abuse, addictions, racism, their own great spiritual doubts. And unfortunately, these were things that they just simply didn't feel they could communicate to another person, even another Christian. The reaction inspired Anne to write a book about the power of confession. It's called Permission to Speak Freely, Essays and Art on Fear, Confession and Grace. And she's on the line now from Nashville. Hi, Anne. Welcome to Open House.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Before we jump into the actual book itself and the question that I guess started it all, let's talk a little bit about your background. You grew up as a pastor's kid.
Yes. I did grow up a pastor's kid and in a very small conservative West Texas town. So you just don't talk about certain things in that kind of environment. You don't talk about sex. You don't talk about politics. You don't talk about really anything except for church and family and food. And those are pretty much the three acceptable topics. But food is definitely high on that list. And I think it still is in my life anyway. But I grew up not really learning a whole lot about culture. We didn't have a TV, we didn't have cable, we didn't have much radio where I grew up. And so culturally, I wasn't even sure what was happening. And I'm 30, so this was all in the 80s. I missed Janet Jackson and Michael Jackson and all that kind of stuff until really I was in my 20s, which is kind of strange to think about. But as I grew up, I just learned as I would ask questions about my faith or about the Bible that sometimes people would just say, no, you can't talk about that, or you can't ask a question like that. It's just in your Bible, so you just have to believe it to be true. And my personality is one that, I'm sorry, but I need a little more explanation. I need to figure this out and process it. So I grew up just kind of questioning my faith and always just wondering, why is what I see people act and how I see people act and what I read maybe in the Bible or what I hear in church, why are they so different from each other? It's very hypocritical in a way. And into my teenage years, my dad left the ministry. He stopped becoming a pastor, and it was just a very ugly, terrible scene the way that he had to leave. Mm-hmm. And it made me turn my back on God from the time I was 16 until I was 22. And during that time, fell into that sex, drugs, and rock and roll kind of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And just wondered, how could a God who supposedly is so loving and caring let something so tragic happen to my family and then not even care about me, you know, who supposedly I'm a child of God, I'm a daughter of God, so yeah. How can this even happen if God's loving? So I just said, forget it, it can't be true, and at that point left my faith.
And just what you've recounted there could well be the experience of many people listening too. There's been that disappointment with the church environment they might have grown up with for very good reasons often. And then some crisis happens, or the way that you see your family members treated or whatever it might be, then there's those big questions that start to come. Now, as a result of you walking away from God, you kind of really, I guess you really delved into what you never had been able to talk about before. I mean, you like you said, you jumped into the whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing. An addiction to pornography also started to be part of that too for you.
Oh, absolutely. We moved to Dallas from the small West Texas area when I was 16, when my dad left the ministry, and going from a school where your class size was very small to a city of 7 million people, you are suddenly exposed to all of this culture that you haven't seen for 16 years. And so I saw strip clubs and billboards with, you know, very sexy ads, and plus the fact I was 16 years old, you know, every 16-year-old knows what it's like to have hormones coursing through their body. So my sexuality was kind of awakened at that point, and during this time I was actually abused by a youth pastor. I was actually abused by a youth pastor who was about 10 years my senior. And that along with all of this external culture and my own hormones and just growing up a teenager, made me turn to the internet. And part of it was just innocent curiosity because I wasn't taught much about sex, but a lot of it was just, I just felt like I needed to see it. So I typed in one night, you know, S-E-X, and pressed enter into the search engine, and out came images and videos and chat rooms, and I just got so sucked into that world of pornography, and it became my medicine almost. I was able to take what I was seeing and in two ways, find some affirmation and find love. I would almost project myself into what I was seeing, and it's flawless, beautiful women, and here I am, an awkward teenager, you know, and they're receiving love and affirmation, quote unquote, from what's going on. But then I needed that in my real life. Like, porn was not enough at that point anymore, and so sex equals love, and that's the language that I learned, was sex equals love. And so in order to feel loved or to feel beautiful or to feel worthwhile, that meant some sort of physical relationship with the man. And that continued on for 6 years, and you get in a cycle to where it makes you feel good for a minute, but then you realize, oh, like, I can't believe I just did that, and I'll never do it again. Mm. But then the next day, it's the same thing. So there's definitely that addiction, along with an addiction to alcohol and to prescription medicine. Anything that would numb the pain I was feeling was what I was chasing.
Yeah, and during this whole time, of course, by this time you've walked away from God, you're not a part of the church, so I guess who could you talk to about some of these things anyway?
Well, most of the people that I hung out with were doing the same things, so it wasn't a very big deal, but I still felt the guilt and the shame from a lot of what I was experiencing. And I had my best friend we met when we were 12 years old, and she moved to Dallas about, I don't know, maybe when I was 20 or 21, and she needed a place to stay, so we became roommates, and she was still very strong in her faith, and she never really judged me for what I was doing. She would never come out and party with me, but she wasn't condemning in any way. Mm-hmm. But she just kind of was this consistent person who was always there, and if, you know, I needed someone to cry, shoulders to cry on because I'd screwed up again or because some boy hadn't called me back, she was there to listen and show me love. And so I think her showing me that love and giving me grace and not judging me was very, very important to me, realizing that I could move into a path where I didn't have to experience the shame anymore.
Yeah. This is Open House. Right across the nation, you're listening to Anne Jackson. She's the author of Permission to Speak Freely. This book basically came out of a blog entry online where she asked people a very, very simple question, which we're going to get to soon. And it's basically spawned this whole idea about confession. 1-300-40-2020 if you have something you'd like to add to the conversation. So let's jump to that question then. What is the one thing you feel you can't say in church? Now, when did you get that idea to post that question and get people's response to it?
It was about 2.5 years ago, so May 2008. I was actually working on staff in a church. So as you can see from the story you've just heard about the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, I ended up refinding my faith and it's at another point just working in a church on staff. And I was going through a very difficult season of depression, which is something that I've struggled with since I was a teenager, something that runs in my family. And I was new to the community and new to that church, and I wasn't sure who I could tell because, again, I was afraid of being judged. You know, Christians sometimes see depression as, oh, that person must be doing something wrong, they must be sinning, or, you know, there's just something wrong with them, and it's a faith issue, and it's not an actual medical condition or a chemical imbalance. And I was afraid that if I told somebody, maybe I would be fired, I would lose my job at the church, or maybe I would just be judged. And so I wondered, are there any other people out there that are Christians that maybe do attend church or have some sort of faith, if they feel like they can't say something in church too? And so I asked that question, and, you know, my blog, it has a pretty decent readership, but I've never received so many comments so quickly on a post. And then different media picked it up. A couple of radio stations actually in Australia used it as a format for some talk discussion, and some other media in the UK picked it up. And within maybe a week or two, we had over 500 responses to that. You know, and we mentioned before everything from sex to addictions, to adultery, to poverty, to racism, social issues, personal issues, even questions about their faith. You know, people saying, I've believed in God for 27 years, but I don't know if prayer actually works. Like, I don't even know if I believe in prayer. Yeah. And they felt like they can't talk about that in the church. And I thought, wow, there is something going on here. If there are all of these people and they feel like the church is not a safe place for them to confess, which is... I mean, confession, in its, you know, purest sense, was born out of the church.
That's right.
And so it should be the safest place. Yeah. So why is this?
Something's gone wrong. I'll read just some of the comments that you've actually got in the book, which is beautifully illustrated, by the way. The artwork in here is really quite something. This is from Prudence. I've tried so hard not to be the stereotypical Christian that I've sinned against God. From Matt, I'm addicted to porn and it's crushing my soul. From Stephen, I confess I had an affair on my wife and I still think about the other woman. From Ashley, I don't trust that God truly has my best interests at heart. So you started getting all of these comments and you started reading through the 500-odd messages, and obviously then people started sending you artistically illustrated versions of those same kinds of confessions. As you were starting to read through, did you see any common thread through what you were reading?
Yes, that was the difficult part, was wondering what do all of these things have in common. And I printed off the list and I studied them for months. And it was one evening in December, so, you know, 7 or 8 months later, when it just kind of dawned on me and I realized it's brokenness. Whenever there's something broken inside us or inside our world, we don't want to talk about it because we want to pretend that everything is okay. We want to pretend that everything in our life is going well and everything in the world is fine, and we don't need to worry about anything. So we're going to pretend how are you? I'm fine. And that was the theme, is if we have an addiction, that's a personal brokenness, so we don't want to talk about it. Racism is something that's a cultural brokenness, and so we don't want to talk about it because I think we're scared to be judged, and I think, you know, we're maybe even scared to have to change if it's something that needs to be changed in the work that needs to be done in order for that change to happen.
Right across the nation, you're listening to Anne Jackson. She's the author of Permission to Speak Freely. We're getting honest on Open House tonight, 1-300-40-2020. Does what Anne's talking about kind of resonate with you? Have you had a similar kind of experience? You can give me a pseudonym if you like. If you want to change your name, that's fine. It's just got to be a real story. 1-300-40-2020. You know, we were talking about before, I mean, confession comes from the Christian church. The book of James in the 5th chapter talks about confess your sins to one another so that you might be healed. There's a long tradition, of course, in the Christian church of confession. Where did things go wrong, do you think, Anne?
I think they went wrong even before the church as we know it existed. I think when Adam and Eve, I think most of us are familiar with the story, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and they eat the forbidden fruit. And that's, you know, where the first sin happened. And when they ate the fruit, the very first thing they did was they realized that they were naked, and it freaked them out, so they covered themselves up, and then they ran, and they hid from God. And so God, the Bible speaks about God pursuing them, you know, trying to find them in the garden and asking pretty much for a confession. He's asking, what happened? You know, where are you guys? What, there was harmony and now there's no harmony. And Adam and Eve, God asked them this question 3 times, and all 3 times they either kind of avoid the question or they point the blame or they confess, but it's kind of a, well, he made me do it, or the serpent made me do it, or Eve made me do it. And so even from the very beginning of time, we've hidden from God. And then I think as we've grown in population and in community, we want to hide from others as well because we don't want to be perceived as having a problem. And, I mean, in the early ages, in the 4th century, I think, the church, as it became an institution, became a safe place for fugitives to hide, because sometimes they wouldn't often receive a fair trial. You know, let's say someone went and stole an apple from a market. Whoever is in power could say, "We'll just kill them," and that's not a fair judgment. And so criminals could actually take refuge in churches, and it's called the Rite of Sanctuary, until they were able to receive a fair trial. But even over time, people started taking away those privileges because they just didn't think that that was right. And so the church no longer was a safe place for criminals. And then if you move on into a spiritual sense, there would be people that were part of the institutional church who would renounce their faith, you know, much like I did when I was 16. Mm. And then they would realize later, well, maybe this is for me. So they would go back to the church and say, "I'm sorry, I messed up. I want to believe again. I want my faith to be there again." And they would be kicked out of the church because people wouldn't want to forgive them. They thought their church was better without the messy people in it.
Mm.
But the Bible talks about the church is actually here for the messy people. It's here for the broken people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not for the people that have it all together, which none of us actually do.
Exactly.
But it's for people who realize their brokenness.
That's exactly right. I mean, the words of Jesus, "I've come for the sick, not for the healthy." His very mission was actually to come and to embrace us. And look what he did in his life and his actions. That's what he did. He went to... you think of the woman at the well, if you know your Bible, you know, the Samaritan woman. So for a start, she was a cultural outcast. But then secondly, we find out that she's had, you know, five odd men, five sexual partners, and Jesus is talking to her. He shouldn't even be talking to her if he's going to be led by his culture. A man shouldn't be talking to a woman, let alone a woman with her kind of reputation. And he's talking to her and he's embracing her and he's basically saying, "Look, I can give you spiritually what you're looking for in all of these men." He's the one who gravitates to the broken. So I guess the thing that we need to get to here is, though, have we got a faulty understanding of God? Because is there a sense in which we're kind of, you know, all my stuff, God's going to be angry, he's going to be wrathful, maybe I need to run?
Yeah, I think sometimes, I know I perceive God that way. I think, and I do think that you know, God is definitely upset when we do things that aren't in his plan. But there are two things I'd like to talk about with that, and one being the term God's wrath, which is a lot of people take that as meaning God's anger, and you just see this angry God that's going to throw a lightning bolt at you, you know, whenever you make a mistake. But the wrath of God is actually his pursuit of justice. It's his pursuit of making things right. And whenever somebody sins or when someone messes up, he grieves that it creates separation, and he grieves that separation, and he wants to make it right. And so I love, there's a commentator who talked about how God pursued Adam and Eve in the garden, and he talks about how God didn't come in the heat of the day or even at night when things seemed scary. He came in the cool evening breeze, you know, just because God doesn't approach that as a hot, he's not a hot and furious God. Isaiah talks about how he doesn't come after us in fury. And so he promises actually to be merciful and faithful when we confess to him, because he just wants to be restored. He wants to rescue us and bring us back to him. And then secondly, the whole point of Jesus coming and dying on the cross and becoming that sacrifice for us, that creates that justice. So when God looks at us, no matter how broken we are or how quote-unquote holy or righteous or good we are, it doesn't matter, because he sees us through the lens of the cross. And so even the best people on the best days, if somebody happened to be perfect one day and didn't mess up one time, without the cross, God still could not look at that person and see them as who they are. It's the cross that makes us complete, and the grace and the freedom that brings.
Yes, so important. And of course, Jesus talked about God in that wonderful story of the prodigal son, you know, as this father who watches his son basically tell him to drop dead, get lost, dad, I want to take the family inheritance, I want to squander it in wine, women, and song, that kind of thing, run off. And basically this father is waiting looking through the window every single day. Is my son coming home today? Is my son coming home today? And when he sees him from afar off, hitches up his skirts, basically, and runs towards him, which, again, culturally was something you just would not do if you were a father in that kind of Israelite environment at the time. It's a profound vision of God. Yes, as you mentioned before, God is not, you know, a pushover, doesn't kind of really care about sin, evil, the horrible things that we do to ourselves and to other people. But he's actually a God of embrace. He runs towards us. He wants to welcome us back to actually bring that restoration. It's so important. Our understanding, our vision of God in all of this is so important.
Yes, absolutely. I think that the image of the prodigal son is precisely what we need to look after. And the I think of the prodigal son and how when he came home, he had this whole plan, you know, just let me work for you. I don't even need to be your son anymore.
Yeah.
But that didn't matter to the father. He just ran and embraced him and said, no, you are my son, and we welcome you home.
Yeah, it's beautiful. This is Open House, 1-300-40-2020 to, I guess, add into the conversation on confession tonight with Anne Jackson, author of Permission to Speak Freely. She posted it on a blog site a couple of years ago. Very, very simple question. The question was, what is the one thing you feel you can't say in church? It certainly opened up this whole idea of confession. Okay, now let's talk about the practical aspects of confession then. A whole bunch of people will say, okay, I've got stuff in my life, and nobody knows about it. Now, there'll be two probably big images that come to people's minds. Number one will be, well, hang on a sec, when I think about confession, I think of, you know, going and sitting in a little dark room, and there's a screen, and there's a priest that I don't know, or don't even, you know, I can't even see on the other side of that screen, and I'm revealing all my secrets to him. The other image might be, hang on, you know, confession, whenever I saw it in my kind of church context, you know, it was when somebody got up in front of the whole church and started confessing to everything that they had actually done. You know, both images may well breed horror in many, many people. How do you think we can move forward then in actually finding somebody to share the deeper stuff that's actually going on in our lives?
Yeah, no, I understand both of those images, and I'm Anglican, so it's very close to the Catholic tradition, and we have a time of confession in our church, but it's not in the booth, it's not with the priest, and it's a wonderful time within our own service. But I think overall, if you don't need a building or a priest to confess. If there is somebody that you can trust, whether it could be a priest or a pastor, or maybe it's a friend or your spouse or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whoever, just another person. I think when we just share what is going on, that weight, that secret that's inside of us with one other person, I think that makes a world of difference, because no longer are we just the ones carrying that weight anymore. You know, we've shared it, and the Bible talks about how we should help each other carry each other's burdens. And so when we share what's going on with someone else, they now have the opportunity to help us walk through that. And if it's something we need to find healing in, to help us get healing, and if it's just something we needed to say, this happened to me, you know, I was abused when I was a teenager, and then I'm carrying shame from that. You know, there's nothing that I can change about that right now, but maybe they can help me realize the truth about who I am, and that I am a beautiful person, and that I am worthwhile. So it's just confessing to somebody that you trust. It could even be a counselor. And that one step, it's not the end, because I think there needs to be a lot of work, you know, just to become more loving and grace-giving and just better people when we do confess. But I think after we get past that fear of what is someone going to think if I say this, there's so much freedom. I love in that verse that you quoted earlier in James about living a life that's healed. That word healed actually means a weight that's been lifted. And so when we have a secret or a weight and we confess it, that weight is lifted off of our spirit. That's what that original meaning of that word means in that context.
Yes.
And those secrets can weigh us down, and they don't have to.
Yeah. We've, I guess, as part of this conversation, had some negative things to say about parts of the Christian church. You know, you had a very, very bad experience where, you know, the general modus operandi was, you know, just put on a smile, hide your secrets, don't rock the boat, those kinds of sentiments. We must say, though, I mean, when it comes to this whole area for myself, it's only been through the context of some absolutely loving, beautiful Christians that this has happened for me. You know, when I've been in the context of, you know, a bunch of people, maybe in a lounge room where we've been able to talk about this kind of stuff, and I've only had really good experiences in this area. The church can actually be a good place to do this in.
Absolutely. And I think of in my own life, the stories I tell in my book are things of my past, but that doesn't mean that I'm perfect now, because I'm very far, far from it. And there are areas in my life now that I need to work on, and secrets that I keep. And it's been within a very small group of people, sometimes over coffee, sometimes over a really rich chocolate cake. As I said earlier, food is very important, I think, this whole idea of confession. But over these meals or over tea, we just talk, and I've found who I can trust, and sometimes I've found who I can't trust, and that hurts, but you learn. And then when you do find the people that you can trust, you know that the next time that something hits you, you can go to them, and in the same way that they can come to you too, because they realize that you're not perfect, they're not perfect, let's just be messy together and try and help each other figure it out, and just be as healthy and as loving and as kind people we can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you had this idea to post this question, you know, what's the one thing that you feel you can't say in church? You were struggling with depression. You were in a church as a staff member, and you had a little bit of fear about confessing your own stuff that was going on within the church. There must have been a certain degree of apprehension even about putting a question like that on your blog for all of your fellow church leaders and church members to see as well.
Yeah, there was, and I just decided I was going to take whatever came my way. But that was in a way, it was a passive aggressive way of reaching out as well, and starting that conversation. Because then you walk through the room to the printer to get something you printed, and people are like, I read your blog today. What does that mean exactly? And you kind of dive into it a little bit, see how safe the waters are, but it's a great conversation starter.
Yeah, and how safe were the waters? Now, how did your church at the time, how did that church respond?
And they ended up being fabulous. We were only in that church for about 6 months. My husband needed to move. We needed to move to Nashville for his job. Mm-hmm. They were wonderful. And I just decided at the end, after reading all of the things that people were saying and realizing, okay, I'm not alone in this, I just went to somebody that I trusted that was on staff and said, here's where I'm at, and I don't know what to do, and there you go, and let the chips fall where they may, and it ended up being very grace-giving. And I still stay in touch with those people that I confessed to there, and we still have a good friendship.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, Anne, it's been very enjoyable to talk to you, and I think important as well. Thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, Anne Jackson. She's the author of Permission to Speak Freely, Essays and Art on Fear, Confession and Grace. Website to go with the book if you want to follow this a little bit further. permissiontospeakfreely.com is the address.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.